somewhat different perspective, perhaps Olympian, will be provided by our next speaker, who is well known to all of us, the Ritter von Kuhnel-Leddihn, who speaks with the authority of a man who has visited nearly every country in the world and who brings a unique understanding of the European Catholic tradition, the close links between the culture of Europe and that of the Spanish world, and who will give us, I think, a different perspective of what is happening beyond our borders.
Ladies and gentlemen, originally this is a one-hour lecture, which I have to compress in 20 minutes. The prehistory, what you hear now, I have written in an article which an Austrian periodical, right-wing periodical, refused to publish because it said this is much too pessimistic. Number one, you can serve this to our readers. And number two, the protest coming from all the South American embassies in Vienna and attacking the opposition party, which is an opposition party because the paper was leaked to it. I sent it to El Mercurio, the leading, the quasi New York Times, not politically speaking, of Santiago. It had originally the title, The Five Wounds of Latin America. El Mercurio published it under the title, The Agony of Latin America. The result was great raising of eyebrows, but the people said terrible, but the man says the truth. I received early this year a high decoration from the Chilean government, and I'm invited to go with my wife on a state visit in 4 weeks. Now you see here what is unbearable for us, for let us say European readers, nevertheless has found the recognition over there. Now, I speak about the five wounds now of Latin America to explain to you why that part of the world is in a sort of agony, which now lasts about 160 years. The first problem, I would say, is certainly the problem of the family. Now, don't forget, when I generalize about Latin America, I'm talking about a tremendous variety of countries. Whatever I say, it is extremely easy to punch holes into it and say, yes, but that would be utterly untrue in Paraguay, or utterly untrue, let us say, in Santo Domingo, or certainly, of course, untrue in Haiti, or maybe even in Uruguay. These are generalizations, and generalizations are bound to be crude. The trouble of the crisis of the family, and I don't want to go into the reasons for the crisis of the family, are that you find, for instance, in Santo Domingo, that of the birth rate there, of the children born, babies born, 85% at least are of illegitimate birth, and they do not come from, you see, common law marriages, but from the fact that women have one affair with one man after the other, with the result that you have women who have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 children, from different partners. The children are then finally under the protection of the grandmother, and grandmaternal authority, as you know, is notoriously weak. Even if there are schools, they do not go to the schools. The reason is machismo, the male pride, which is not a purely sexual pride, but the pride of procreation. Now, I was pointed out at the big party of a member of the Parliament of Santo Domingo, and I said, if you approach him, he's going to boast also not only of his legitimate but illegitimate children. But if you congratulate him for that, he will say, you should have known that. I have 103 brothers and sisters. Now you see, you can imagine now, the data are about alike. I mean, this is an extreme case. But if you go to Peru, at least again two-thirds, of course, would be legitimate. Now this is a very important element because it links up with the problem number two, which is a very, very big problem. Problem number two is what the Spaniards call la gana de trabajar, the disposition for hard and systematic work. And of course, this problem is specifically high in that part of Latin America where the Indian percentage and the percentage of mestizos is extremely high. It also has to do, up to a certain extent, probably with IQs. Remember all the colossal efforts, which I am familiar with, of the American governments in raising the level of the American U.S. Indian. How many of them, and millions and millions and millions have been spent in the years. What did you really do to raising fundamentally their level? Of course, viewing all that from the point of view of an industrial civilization. The IQs are taken from the point of view of an industrial civilization. Now please, we should never forget that there are only two areas on this globe with high work ethics, and that is Reformation Northwest Europe, where slowly the work ethics went south and east, have certainly never reached up till this age, the Soviet Union, and on the other hand, the Far East, where you find Confucian ethics. And the rest of the world is Third World. I mean, of course, that includes North America. You must realize that in the Middle Ages, there were the number of days on which work was not done was between 120 and 160. Only with the abolition of the feasts of the saints and so on, this was changed in the Reformation. So you can imagine then, of course, that you get always in these countries an enormous number of poor people and a very relatively small middle class, and then a social pyramid finally with a very broad basis which shrinks suddenly and finally comes up in a very thin needle. But you see, redistribution of wealth would be perfectly senseless because the cubic content of that needle is very, very minor. You break it off and you pour it down over the basis and nothing, there are a lot of statistics about that, nothing would be changed. The change will be only possible provided, you see, there were really a general dedication to hard and systematic work and to saving, and so forth, and so forth. Now, you can see individuals, of course, even among the mestizos, even among the Indians, individuals there have been who could rise, because the social rise in Latin America is not difficult. It is actually very easy. And I remember here still, I mean, one point only, a hotel in Bogota, I'm checking in front of me, a typical mestizo, very brown face, you can see, with a fur coat with enormous golden rings on his fingers, and he ordered an apartment. A sitting room, bedroom, kitchenette, bathroom, and finally when the room clerk gave him the book to register, he made three X's without batting an eye. He had 10 fingers and he had 10 toes, he could count at least up to 20. And he had made his way up, he came from the humblest classes. Of course, the percentage of people who have made their way up are very often of foreign origin, even, let us say, of recent Spanish origin. Now, the Red Spanish immigration into Mexico, to give you here an instance, was enormous after the Spanish Civil War. These people were extreme leftists, of course, in a free society with enormous possibilities, became very quickly conservatives. Mexicans call it the vultures, los topilotes. For instance, the baking industry in Madrid is almost entirely in the hands of Spaniards. Now, according to Mexican allegations, and I could not investigate whether they're right or wrong, but at least one-fourth, or some say nearly one-half of the Mexican national wealth is in Spanish hands. And I mean in recent Spanish hands, not in old Spanish hands. You see here that Indian problem, and of course this lacking dedication to hard work, in the encomienda system, which was not pure slavery, in other words, in the encomienda, you could not make the people work as you make the work slaves. It was a complete failure, speaking 15th, 16th century. The result was the importation of Negro slaves from Africa who had to work instead of the Indians, who sometimes preferred rather to die than to work. Now, these two elements, the uneven social conditions, you see, already prompted by the marriage problem, leads us to wound number three, and the wound number three is the political problem. You see, I went specially to Guayaquil, the harbor city of Ecuador. And that harbor city, in that city in 1821 was a very important meeting. The liberator of North and South America, Simon Bolivar, and the liberator of Southern South America, Jose San Martin, who was an Argentine. I wanted to see the house where they met. The house exists no longer. But there is a monument there, and you can see a brilliant monument of two frightened men trying to put courage into each other. And we do know what the conversation was. San Martin said, look here, you know our people as I know them. A democratic republic is an impossibility. Give me the mandate and I will go to Europe and find the scion of a royal or imperial family and let him come over and become the king or the emperor of Hispanic America. He also thought naturally about the example of Brazil, which was a monarchy at that time and was a monarchy until 1888. And we know the answer of Bolivar. He said, no, my friend, I can't do that. Maybe you're right, I can't do that. As a young man on the Monte Sacro near Roma, I gave an oath to liberate Latin America, the Hispanic America, and to establish democratic republics here. I mean, certainly under the enormous influence and idea of the success of the young United States of North America. And then San Martin said, then we are lost. He went down to Argentina, packed his suitcases, went into voluntary exile, died in 1850, and of course knew and saw how his country was torn asunder by the most violent and brutal civil wars. There was Rosas, the Caligula of Latin America. And then not many years later, Bolivar saw his error. And the dying Bolivar said, we have plowed the sea. We're going to fall back in a primeval chaos that no European power would even dream of reconquering us. And we are going to be under the leadership and under the thumb of tyrants of all races and colors. The very last words are even more depressing. I give you shortly in Spanish because some of you speak Spanish. No hay fe en América, ni en los hombres, ni en las naciones. Las constituciones son libros, los tratados papeles, las elecciones luchas, la libertad anarquía y la vida un tormento. There is no trust in America, meaning Spanish America, neither in people nor in nations. The constitutions are mere books. The treaties are scraps of paper. The elections are battles, liberty is anarchy, and life a torture. He died fleeing Latin America on his way near the Magdalena River, probably wanting to go either to the Caribbean or to the United States. And now you think about George Washington. You see, the will of the wisp, we have will of the wisp in history, Switzerland, England, and finally this country, the United States. Looking people at the success of these countries and convinced they could be imitated or copied, and they cannot be copied. Here is a guilt, of course, innocently a guilt, of the United States really here in this world. Because you can very well realize that in these countries, which are ideologically in strong hands, where there are enormous ideological currents, where the beloved method of trial and error, which Americans and English believe, Britishers believe in, are not valid and are not active, where revolutions to turn down the world of Clausewitz said, you know, that wars are nothing but a continuation of parliamentarism with other means. And of course, in the same way you could say, civil wars in Latin America are nothing but a continuation of parliamentarism with other means. Because if they cannot be a dialogue, if you do not have the atmosphere of this is a post-Protestant situation. I think I'm right in my own ways. And also, you differ from me. You're right in yours. You're both right and wrong. And let's make it 50-50. It does not exist. In other words, if A is right and B contradicts B is wrong, B should have not a chance to carry out his nefarious ideas into reality. Now, mind you, this is not only Latin America. this is really basically European. Well, never forget, democracy has only been a temporary success. I emphasize a temporary success because I see very clearly the Hippocratic traits of democracy even in Northern Europe. But so far, in the Protestant kingdoms, in the islands and peninsulas of Northern Europe, in Switzerland. In other words, it is an exceptional situation. And the dream to democratize the world, which came from this unfortunate gravedigger of Europe, the first American gravedigger, Mr. Woodrow Wilson, I mean, followed later on by FDR, is, you see, an irrealism. Is that Lasky, Harold Lasky has pointed out democracy is only viable if two conditions are being met, a two-party system, but even more important, that the two parties have a common philosophy, that there are mere ins and outs. You won't get it in Latin America. Therefore, the copying of the American Constitution, which was done everywhere, was instantly perverted. Whereas it was only perverted in Germany after 11 or 12 years. You see, it took a longer time. In Russia, it was perverted after 6 months, you see. You must visualize it. In other words, not pointing just a finger to Latin America. These are world problems. The next wound is the church. I'm a very black, fanatically bigoted Catholic. But of course, looking at the Catholic Church in Latin America, in the past, this church, which is in most Latin American countries, bitterly poor. Now, don't go to Mexico, and there's a wonderful cathedral, the Zocalo, the wonderful cathedral in gold and silver, and then you find in the cathedral, you find the priest who eats beans for breakfast and beans for lunch and beans for dinner, because the cathedral doesn't belong to the Catholic Church. Es propiedad federal, no fijar carteles. This is federal property. Don't stick bills. Any building in Mexico which is being used for any religious purpose immediately becomes federal property. Or in Ecuador. In Ecuador, unforgettable. In Belen, the suburb of Quito, a Monsignor and two vicars, and the vicars had only one suit, and they slept like dogs on the ground, and they were feeding only on beans, and they had about three or four books, and if their clothes went wet, they had to sit in the underwear and wait until they dried. Collections on Sundays between $8 and $12 or $11. Now that this church, you see, which unfortunately, and this is an important point, we come back to the Gana de Trabajar, did not teach the natural virtues. Don't commit adultery, be responsible, don't steal, don't lie, don't use drugs, don't get drunk. You see, save your money, think about your children. In other words, was really putting the emphasis on the marginal aspects of the Catholic Church. Wearing medals, participating in pilgrimages, worshipping most doubtful saints, but not the natural virtues. And here lies the real guilt, and of course don't be now surprised when, just like a monkey in the jungle swinging from one tree to the other, a sizable part of the Catholic clergy came over to Marxism and socialism and various forms of leftism, also motivated by their own frightful poverty. You know, there's also this element here, the poverty, and of course the seduction by these ideas, because never forget that socialism is a une fausse idée claire, as our friends de Tocqueville would have said, a false but clear idea. I'll explain to anybody the working of socialism in 11 or 12 minutes. It's very simple. But of course, to explain the working of a free market economy, I need a seminar of 2 weeks. You see, therefore you fall for that. Plus, don't forget, and this is not only a Latin American problem, this is a problem in Europe too, and of course in your country, with your bishops here, you know, don't be surprised, that they do not heed the words of Romans 12:2, me susematices de to aioni tuto, do not fall into the same scheme as the world, and do not ape the world, and the spirit of the times. Aion means the spirit of the times and the world. And you get, therefore, you get priests in Latin America, and their vision, their social problem vision, is just like I once said, You think this is just like a cell with four inmates and one is a brutal bully and he eats away half the portions of the three other men. He gets bigger and stronger and the others get weak. Exactly, yes. And I say, that has no analogy in a free society. None whatsoever. Where the working class can obviously organize, and where the man, of course, has to do something with his extra money. I mean, he either gives it to a bank and it goes into circulation, or his wife is buying expensive clothes and he buys cars, and obviously, through thousands of channels, the thing is dispersed, but they don't think that way.